Hello, Lindy. My name's Helen. I have a question. I just hope it's an appropriate one. What's been on my mind to ask you is, Lindy, when you were incarcerated and most thought that you were guilty and your family was so affected, how did your faith in your God stand you and keep you through that time?
I wouldn't have existed without it. So what it did was go from, you know, you often think you've got faith and you think you know God, and it isn't until something hits you that you realise a lot of it's head knowledge, and you have a sudden transplant from your head to your heart, and you learn the difference between a God you hear about and technically know about and who is out there somewhere to a God who is in here and beside you. And that is as real as the person sitting next to you. And if you don't know God, it's like the wind. You can't prove wind exists. And technically it doesn't. It's air. And something is making it move, which is wind. But you can feel it. And nobody's going to tell you there's no such thing as wind. And God's the same. You can feel him. You know he's there. But I can't prove to you he exists. You have to find that out for yourself. But he is there and he's real, and you can't tell me that I came from some accidental explosion somewhere and we all became the beings we are today and that we are progressing. Nothing on this earth is getting better. We go from order to chaos, not chaos to order. And if you think you're the biggest and best thing out there, go ahead. I can guarantee your neighbours don't think you're God, even if you think you are. Now, my husband had this brilliant idea. Take off your roving mic and you use the still one and you can use that to rove. So if you want to ask a question, you do the waving thing and we're going to pass the headset around. And don't be shy putting up your hands because I'm watching.
Hello, Lindy.
I'll tell the man who's not watching where you are if you put them up early.
Hello, Lindy. Thank you very much for tonight. I just wondered, with your children through all this process, how have they dealt with it and how have they healed?
Individually. Of course, they're well and truly adults now. When I said to a guy the other day, he'd just done a back treatment on Aidan as he came through because he'd helped hurt his shoulder, and he said something, and I said something about being over 40, and he said, "What? I thought he was 32. No, he's 46. Every last one of them has had their own journey. As every one of you, if something happens in your family, will have your own journey. Not always the person closest to you can help you. Sometimes that's a stranger that you meet a couple of days later, and their experience and their outlook and their physiological makeup is like yours, and they can help you more than the person that you're married to or more than your children. And it's no good going around saying, you're supposed to be there to support me and you should think like I do. No, we've all got different parents, we've all got different makeups. And certainly plenty of people, not in a minute, can somebody move this big blob? And then people on that table aren't going to be, that's better, now I can see everybody. You know, we are all so different. And I got, you know, look at the hard-faced bitch and she doesn't care and she's not crying. And others go, oh, that's exactly what I did. And then, hang on, she's crying in that thing. I could tell she'd been crying. Her eyes are all red. You know, it depends how observant you were. First interview I ever gave, I was wearing dark glasses and howling my eyes out. But because I didn't have the glasses off, you didn't know that, and I'd managed to control my voice. And the media at that stage told me we cannot show any pictures of you crying because the public will crucify us. They would only show the others. And about the time I got released from prison, they were then showing people crying and whatever. So they got out all the old photos. And I'd have people writing and saying, oh, why didn't you do that before? Got news for you, they're old photos. So you can never please everybody. Your reactions aren't going to be what somebody else is. If you grew up in Spain or somewhere, let's go Italy because they're world renowned, or French for going, and they make a big noise. And in the Middle East, it's traditional to wail if something happens. If you're in Britain, better put some glue on your upper lip and don't you dare cry. You know, where we're born and our ancestral lineage do make a big difference to how we react. And I've got to say, you try walking through a room where everybody's calling out rude names to you and see what your face goes like. It's not easy. Mine used to go just really stiff, and to make matters worse, our police bodyguard used to tell us crazy Irish dad jokes just before we got out of the car, and you're trying not to laugh and not to show emotion on your way through. It's difficult. And my kids, I have... Well, don't make Carly mad. She'll give you a mouthful that'll make your ears burn and probably teach you a few new words, much to my chagrin and disgust, but she uses them anyway. And the boys can fight together as much as they like, but don't try and tackle them independently or you will make a wall of hurt they band together. But every last one of them has issues from what's happened to them. Some of them worse than others. On the surface, Aidan is probably now doing the best, which I would have said initially he was doing the worst, but he was liable to lose his temper and punch somebody and has got a lot of it out of his system, and now he's got three little girls of his own. He understands a lot more than he did. Whereas Regan tends to go into his shell and is having a great deal of difficulty being in the public and in the workplace. Carly is just plain angry and she's still not sure why. And a lot of that I can trace back to what's happened to them as kids. And doesn't matter how much mum talks on learning to forgive yourself, some of them have taken some on board and the others are not ready to hear that yet, mum. It takes time. No more hands, time's up. We'll be up if you don't stick your hands up quicker.
Hello. today is the day that Ayers Rock cannot be climbed anymore. Everybody realises that. I was going to ask you, Lindy, that is there a memorial or anything for Azaria at Uluru?
Not there, no. People regularly steal the plaques out there. And places that were never sacred when I climbed it have become sacred since, etc., etc. You notice Ayers Rock is not off limits to tourists. You still get charged to go in there. It's still a money-making thing. I've got to admit, I'm really pleased they're pulling the chain down because I climbed it before it went up. And my name was about quarter to a third of the way through the first ever book, which had been up there about 5 years. Don't quote me on that, it might be wrong, but it had been up there quite a long time and I was only that way through it. In 1986, I think it was, they were doing 2 or 3 books per week. And before this last weekend, when everybody looked like ants and they were queuing to climb it, I understand they were changing it twice daily in the high season. And that's a bit much, just simply to say you've climbed it. And when my parents and I and one of Dad's co-workers climbed it, we were the only people at Ayers Rock apart from some of the Aboriginals who we said, can we climb? And they said, yeah, you go round there. It's fine. Anywhere not to go? No, you can go where you like. I've been into every one of those sacred sites with full permission before they came sacred. And yet, a while back, we were doing a photo shoot for something and we were on the path, which is the new path around the rock, and Rick's quite a bit taller than me, so I just jumped on this little boulder in the middle of the pathway, and that would bring me a little bit nearer his height because I'm going to do headshot. And it was obvious the Aboriginals were unhappy and they kept saying, why? And I'm looking around thinking, well, what's behind me never was sacred, but maybe it is. You know, maybe is this sacred now? Can we not have a picture? No, that was okay, everything. He finally said, well, you're not happy. What? Sacred stone. Get off. I think, just point to it in the first place. Now, you can't tell me with all the liaison that went on when that new path was put there that that was allowed to go through a sacred stone. The thing that happens is something happens to them in their life journey and it becomes sacred to them and it makes it a sacred place, whereas it wasn't before. And I'm all for keeping Aboriginal rights. But I'm not so keen on changing things, and if I decide to have it, I can walk through an empty block in downtown Sydney and say, my grandmother and I walked through here when I was a little girl and she told me stories of the dream time. This is sacred land. I claim this block. We're taking it over the top. And when we've been out there, we've never had any problem with any of the traditional owners. The ones we have the problems with are the rangers who have 1 drop or 6 drops of Aboriginal blood who come out there and try and dictate to the elders. And I've tried to see Barbara Tikachu, who did most of the tracking that night, several times. And the rangers come back and say, no, we've taken it to the head people. They say, no, you cannot. Barbara doesn't want to see you. And then the head, you have to have a head man and a head lady come round with you for official magazine photos or anything else. And if you can get near them, past these little 20-year-old, I was going to call them something rude, but I won't, and talk to them if they speak English, which sometimes one doesn't and one does, then they're like, you're coming to see Barbara? say, no, I can't. Why not? Why are you not come? Well, I asked. Council said no. Not true. Well, yeah, Rangers, no. I am head woman. I am on council. He is head man. They never asked us at all. And yet they were supposed to have asked him overnight. And just to check, he didn't speak English, so she asked him in his own language, and he's going like this. No, I wasn't asked either. She came back, no. They did not go to council. What'd he do? And to me, a lot of this is just politics. It is not the heart of the real Aboriginal people. It's give me what I can because I'm white and I want the cheap way to go, and I'll call on one drip 1,000 years ago. I'd had my rant now. We all good. I spent probably 6 hours on the top of Ayers Rock. I've walked from one end to the other and side to side. There's waves like this on the top of it. Down the end, you don't walk. And fish in the mud. There'd been a 10-year drought and they were still alive. And they come out when it rains in the puddles on the top. Fascinating stuff. Can't go there now, it's sacred.
Would you like to have something for a memory of Azaria at Uluru?
I have a memorial to her. Right now it's in a box in storage. But in the middle of the night one night, you know, best ideas come in the middle of the night. You're taking that microphone right up the back. I woke up and knew what it should be. And I have a fountain about that round. It's a dish with a baby in it.
Ready? Lindy, thank you very much for coming tonight. My name's Lyndon. I'm a psychotherapist in private practice. I would like to ask you a direct question, probably a bit hard, but is there one single lesson that you have brought out of all of this, of your life that so far? Because...
The answer's no. There's never a single lesson.
Is there one that would stand out then, perhaps?
No.
Because I deal with people, obviously, in therapy all the time, and I often refer to you, and I'd love you to give me a really good answer. Don't avoid the hard questions, please. But I out of all respect to you, I honour you and respect you, but I would like to know, is there something that I could share with my clients?
Lots of things. Take a pick from anything you heard tonight or anything is in my other talks. To me, I don't think there's any one thing that takes precedence over anything else, and if you knew me better, you wouldn't try and be asking me questions like that, because both the psychiatrists that they sent me to for the Royal Commission and one we had ourselves ended up going into way and complaining that I was far too sane for their liking. I asked them questions and tell them why they had got into psychiatry. I could start psychoanalysing you if you like. Look, there are so many things that you learn. I don't know, maybe... Probably I've spent more time on it than anything else. It's my talk on forgiveness over there, and I just realised I moved what I was going to show you. You better give those to me. Because if you're going to be a whole balanced person, forgiveness is probably up the top. That's that one. Who's the tenant in your head? And it's about 45 minutes, and it is forgiveness full stop. It's longer than I normally give in churches, Nick, because I didn't realise how slow I actually speak as opposed to read, and I had to, what seemed to me was like talk like a Gatling gun to get it on time. You've got a big clock in front of you at Hillsong that just goes like this and it counts down and you see your time going and you have to talk faster and faster. So it's about 20% shorter if you hear me give it live. And if you don't get your question answered today, this one is about 2 hours long. You even get to hear Rick on this and some of us together. It covers everything from questions on the case and the forensic to step parenting, divorce, Christianity, what do you believe, lessons you've learned out this, where's your faith, what's your favourite hobbies, what are your kids doing? And Rick, how did you dare join this crazy nutty family? And he has his own say in that. And much to our interest, we did this with Ben Woods, who was part of the AOG movement and then Hillsong, and he's now on a church plant somewhere near Vegas. And he said to me one day, I'd like to mine your head, Lindy. And eventually after 2012, I said, OK, Ben, now's the time. And he kind of said, not me, Lord. And I said, if it's not you, I'm not doing it. So he went away and prayed about it. And the way we did it was interesting. We went ahead in faith and we didn't actually have the money to pay anybody or to produce it. And then Hillsong asked me to speak there to their women's meeting in the morning and took up an offering that paid exactly for the production of this. And it's been used, now we're told, in small groups. They're playing the video of a question and answer of me and then discussing it. Some of them need no discussion, obviously. They're using it in prison ministries and all sorts of groups. So chances are, I actually haven't even watched it all the way through. We did 4 days, out of which Ben collated 2 hours. And as he said, pick the best bits of the gold in the mining. So if you want to know what's happening, there it goes. The other one's a talk that happens to be my most popular talk. And now I've got myself solid again, I will tell you that the dish says celebrating life with Azaria's name at the bottom. And it's a baby with a sponge in her hands and the water from the sponge dribbles out onto the baby's stomach, and it's interesting. It'll move one way and then it'll go the other. And I can have it. We thought it was safe for outdoors, and then they say you've got to protect it. So we had it inside in the lounge room, but there's a big rock at Landsborough that is drilled for it to sit on. And when we tried to get to the top of the hill, it was wet, and so it's still down the bottom. We've got to wait till it's dry to literally get it up the top of the hill from where we bought it up from New South Wales. And one of these days I might get another house and I can put it in the yard in a place where it's protected. That is my memorial, and I have roses commemorating a couple of dogs that belonged to one of the girls in prison who wanted them there, and a rose for my dad and various other things like that. So we call it the Memorial Garden, which is to be planted again up here somewhere. And it wasn't, you know, it's less than 2 hours to Landsborough. I actually do live close. Any more questions?
Yes, Lindy, I'd be interested to know, did other inmates in jail recognise your strength And also another question, how can we buy your goods online? Because I haven't bought enough money tonight.
For these, I said to Rick, did you bring the FPOS with you? And he went, no, I couldn't be bothered tonight. So be borrow and steal off your neighbour or race down the street and back. Or you can go onto my website, lindychamberlain.com. Has somebody complained it wasn't updated? Well, tough, Rick's busy. got more than enough to do right now. So that will get you these. The... doesn't get you this? He said they're not on there. But if you go to the contact page and ask Rick for it, he'll send you an invoice. You can pay online and then he will post them to you. We did have, you know, one of those nice automatic contact Lindy things, and I got so much junk mail, we made it a little more difficult to save Rick's sanity. The book, Through My Eyes, is out of print in Australia, but you can go on Amazon, on our Kindle or ebooks, and... it's cheaper than in the hardcover that it used to be. It's $5, somewhere between $5 and $6, and you can download it and get technical. Are we done? No, up there.
Sort of make it clear enough. I was interested to know how you fraternised with the other people in jail and whether they recognised your strength and if you were useful to that situation.
Sorry, I got sidetracked.
That's okay.
And you need to take the microphone up the back. One of the girls, after watching me for ages, which I had no idea she had done, on the day they transferred her back to Brisbane, she raced in and said, I really wish I could be like you. And I said, it was a bit stunning, actually, and she came right into my cell, which you weren't supposed to do, and I said to her, well, you can if you want to. And she later wrote to me from Brisbane, Bogger Road, I think she was in, and said, blow me down, every girl I meet and like turns out to be a Christian, so your God must be telling me something. And she later did theology studies and counselling and then worked with Aboriginal Affairs. She was half Aboriginal or three quarters Aboriginal. And when she got out, she then worked with Aboriginals within the prison system and just flipped her life right around, which was nice to see. And certainly I spent quite a lot of fun and had some really good talks with a number of the Aboriginal girls in prison who were Christians. One of them in particular was what I would consider a strong Christian and was supposedly doing time for murder. But their counsel for the Crown was the same one we had. They had Ian Barker, and those girls never even got a translator until after their appeal was over. They had no idea what they were talking about. And she said to me, Lindy, I hit him, but he was alive when I left. I made sure he was. And another girl came in later who was giving her a wide berth, nasty piece of work. I reckon she was the one that did the problem. And there was three innocent girls in there, Aboriginal girls, doing life in with me. And then, of course, there's the girl that... who's two of her favourite dogs, not all of them, but the ashes of two of her favourite dogs come with me, and she still keeps in contact. we have these conversations where I end up putting the phone on speaker and holding it because she talks so loud and swears so much. And she was annoyed about something, but she calls me Mum and she calls Rick Dad, despite the fact he's only 12 years older than her. And she still keeps in contact. Three or four, five times a year she'll ring, depending on her mood, and still keeps in contact. A lot of the people that I was in with are now dead, unfortunately. And the ones that aren't were usually from overseas. So I've now lost touch with all except the cat. If any of you have read my book, I won't blow her name for you in case she's still in trouble every now and then.
Lindy, this might seem a bit strange to the people in the room here. When the little toddler got taken on Fraser Island, my thoughts went straight to you and to Azara. And to my thought was, now I hope some of the disbelievers have come and decided that this is what did actually happen. Did you have a thought about that?
Yes, and I've had letters since. People mainly going, wow, and she was inside a caravan and it unzipped and it had to stand on its hind legs to unzip, but it still managed to get the little one out. And look, it's interesting. Rick was giving me figures the other day. Is it 20% or 30%? The polls. When this first happened, 30% of people believed me and 70% thought I'm guilty. It's done a flip and now 70% think I'm innocent and the other 30% still think I'm guilty. And each time something like this happens, one or two people will go, well, that proved me wrong now. I realise I've believed the wrong thing. But there's a little scene in the play where supposedly the librarians are talking, kept them up all night trying to work out which of their member thought I was guilty. It's the only fictitious scene in the whole thing, because when Alana Valentine was doing her research for writing the play Letters to Lindy, it's what she came across. Of people, normally they go, oh, that's interesting. You know, what made you do that or whatever? This time, people got on their favourite high horses again and she said the divide there is as strong as ever. And she found that a lot of the people who thought I was guilty did it because that's what the family believed and you don't change. You have to stick with the family, who read the first thing years ago and have refused to read anything since. You can't change everybody's mind, ever. That's their problem, not mine. If you live your life by what people think of you, you may as well shut yourself in a cupboard.
I'll just finish on that, Lindy, is that my grandfather was a drover down in New South Wales. And my mother used to tell me, because they used to go out with him when he was droving sheep, and also the Aborigines with their whip and bring them into line. That was the kids he'd bring into line, not the sheep. But she told me about the dingoes taking little baby lambs. So, you know, anyway, thank you.
Yeah, we kept getting letters from farmers and doggers that worked the dingo fence and all that sort of thing, calling people idiots. But, of course, it hit right at the time when breeders were trying to have dingoes classified as an official dog breed and a pet, and it stood on a lot of toes. And in actual fact, a dingo is a wolf, not a dog. Do you know what the difference is? Dingoes have retractable claws like a cat, so that they can walk all over the rocks where a dog's claws will make it slide. And its jaw disarticulates like a snake. So it can open a lot wider than a dog would break its jaws on. And that's how the trackers knew, you know, no, it's not dog, not camp dog, it's dingo. No claw marks. So there's all these little things that just go straight over your head. You learn all sorts of things. Now, you were dealing with coastal dingoes. And there's even a difference between a coastal dingo and a Central Australian dingo. They go to the zoo down by Luna Park there, you know, hop on the ferries in Sydney and go across to the zoo and have a look at the dingoes. If you go at a certain time of day, they have the coastal dingoes out. There's one they can bring almost to the fence, looks like a beautiful pet. It will pose for photos, they can handle it. The animals are curious and will come right up to you. Later in the afternoon, around closing time of the zoo, they let the Central Australian ones out. Different ball game. They will come nowhere near the fence. And if you look behind, you'll notice cages up the back and there's pacing dingoes in them. They just pace all day. And they're the Central Australian ones. And when they let them out, they have to put one in a holding pen over there while they get the other one in so they can let this one out and vice versa, because they fight, hate one another. One is wild and the other one can be tamed. And because they're a Central Australian dingo, there is lots of sand in their diet. And their teeth are like knives because the sand sharpens their teeth all the time. Odd things you learn when you have to read the forensic. I didn't know any of that. But it's really interesting. So when they're saying, oh, teeth can't do that, their teeth can because they are sharp like scissors. That's more information than you wanted. Has anybody got an interesting question for the last one? And I think this is going to be the last question, or we're going to finish now. Everybody wants to go home. That's the last question. Nobody put their hand up. Who wants the microphone? You do, don't you? The man with all his girlfriends here really wants to say good night.
Thank you.